This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Glow and Tell on ORFM, where women from around the world shine, speak and share
what beauty, power and presence mean in their culture, their way.
Welcome to Glow and Tell. Today I'm very excited. I have somebody on my show who is, it's the second time you are with me, Nuran.
Yes.
Nuran is a PhD candidate in social anthropology in University of Otago. And she's one of the person who I really wanted to have for a couple of reasons, which you will find out soon what was so special about having Nuran here. Today we are talking on a journey from golden sands of Cairo to the cool breezes of Dunedin. Nuran is brilliant and beautiful. She's a PhD student in University of Otago, originally from Egypt, and as it's lovingly knowing, Ummul Dunya, the mother of the world. She lived and studied in Egypt, Lebanon, and New Zealand. Wow, beautiful places, with career that blends advocacy, human rights, and academia. But today we are diving into the personal glow story, her beauty routines, the ancient traditions of her homeland, and how life as a scholar and a mom has shaped her self-care. Nuran, welcome to the Glow and Tell. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Humaira.
No, it's absolutely a pleasure to have you. I was looking forward to this one because when we think about Egypt, when we talk about Egypt, the thing which comes in our mind is always beauty, the glam, the beautiful clothes. Like the images come in your mind are just absolutely perfect, like how they were at that time 5,000 years ago. So let's start with your homeland, Cairo. A city that's alive 24/7, and I have witnessed that it is alive. What are your earliest beauty-related memories from growing up there?
I mean, this is a very good question because in Egypt, I think all Egyptians are very the kind of look very high to cinema stars.
Yeah.
And actresses,
yeah.
They are what we can call now trendsetters,
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So we used to follow their news, buy the magazines, try to find out about like the latest fashion waves, like of hairdress, how they hairdress themselves, the fashion. Yeah, so I think for us, cinema stars and drama stars were like the very central in how we perceive,
yeah,
and how we conceive, mm-hmm, beauty, what beauty is. Egypt also modernized very early. So since 1800s, Egypt started or embarked on modernizing project. And since then, I think we are in very in contact with Europe, like, mm-hmm, in modern ages. Even in 50s and 60s, we have this kind of beauty icons. Mm-hmm. If we can talk about Layla Murad, Hind Rostom, mm-hmm, and like they are on the same bar of like Hollywood stars. That's why Egypt is also known as like the Hollywood of the East.
Mm.
Yeah, and always we have parallels. So we say like Hind Rostom is like Marilyn Monroe of the East, which is, I think, is very downgrading because Hind Rostom was very natural and she was super feminine and, yes, she was blonde and seductive somehow. So I think, yeah, Hind Rostom is just like more beautiful than Marilyn Monroe. Some people feel unease with these kind of comparisons or like parallels being drawn between Egyptian stars and worldwide, or yeah, like world famous stars in the Western world.
Yeah, and I can totally relate to that because when I visited Cairo and I visited some of the malls over there, it was definitely Hollywood. I would say that Hollywood influence was there, and you can see the most modern clothes and, you know, the trends. The and the women I saw there, they do look like stars, and they do look like, you know, that they look after themselves and they follow the trends and all. And and you mentioned about 50s and 60s. Yeah, when I was preparing to having you, I had a look on some photos in early days, and yeah, there was not much difference in the fashion sense back then also, like so definitely westernized a lot, and the living style, the fashion sense, it all is westernized. So this is very good term, Hollywood of Africa, Asia?
Of the East.
East, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. This is very ironic because sometimes when I reflect now as an anthropologist, I feel all this kind of beauty standards that we were surrounded with were like subconsciously affected by colonization somehow. And I discovered that we never had a TV anchor who is black-skinned, mm-hmm. where in Egypt we have black-skinned people. Mm-hmm. And in all my childhood memories in 90s, I remember all the TV presenters were blonde, which mm-hmm. is very ironic, in mm-hmm. a North African country like Egypt. So there was kind of not a natural selection. It was mm-hmm. very selective selection mm-hmm. of who could be presented on TV to mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is also a very dark side of the Hollywood of the East. So it was not naturally like a natural thing. It was like kind of, especially when it comes to women, men then is different. And then we had like a big, huge shift in 80s. Mm. So we started having male cinema stars who are black skinned, mm-hmm. like Ahmed Zaki. And this was a revolution. Like it was not present, like it was unprecedented to see this thing. Mm-hmm. In women, it's less likely to happen. So we had someone called Maali Zayed, who's also dark skinned, but she was known to be highly attractive. Mm-hmm. So her attractiveness and her like hourglass body mm-hmm. was compensating her skin color, which is not, yeah, but she was really well cultured, very artistic. She was also like a painter, like she, she's like, yeah, she was really, really cultured actress. So that's also another, you know, factor that I realized when I grew up and I critically, no curly hair was actually common in all these kind of, you know, beauty normatives at the time. But now it's different. There is also a huge shift in 2000s and now women are trying to celebrate their curly hairs. And we have groups on Facebook and social media where people have their own collectives trying to say no to treatments to straighten their hair and try to embrace their curly hairs. So, and also have their care routines. Because also beauty needs labor and time.
When we say about the skin colors and stuff, I'm personally a big fan of dark skin. And I think all the supermodels nowadays are, you know, the dark skin because their beauty is unmatchable with the glass skin, as you said. So definitely. When we talk about beauty anywhere in the world, it's not only Egypt, anywhere in the world. Nefertiti and Cleopatra, they are definitely beauty icons from 5,000 years ago until now. They do come. And I think when they did the analysis of Nefertiti, am I saying her name right? Yeah. So when we see the analysis of her face, she has got she had the perfect face by then. So being an Egyptian, what did Egyptian beauty mean in your home and community? Like, when I say Egyptian beauty, I mean the ancient Egyptian beauty. Yeah. Was that something which was followed or talked about, or was it something that mean to you, or not really it impacted?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question, because when I reflect on my childhood and how I was brought up in different cultures. So my mom is from a coastal city, but she was then by age of 9 or 10, moved to Kuwait. So, you know, my mom's side also shows this kind of huge wave to Gulf, migration to the Gulf countries because of the oil boom and everything. So I grew up, I feel like my grandma embraced or represents some of like Gulf vibe. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when she does her kohl or eyeliner, it's something that I think it's she gained during her stay in Kuwait. Or like when she drinks her tea with cardamom, not with mint, as we do as Egyptians. So I feel like she has like this kind of a Khaliji Gulf influence going around. And and she don't say like galabeya to the garment. She says dishdasha in Kuwaiti accent. Whereas my father's side, I saw my grandma to be this true representation of an Egyptian peasant woman who is very, she has a very nice lifestyle. She wakes up at 5 a.m. She is very healthy. She moves. She bakes. And for her, beauty routine is very simple. Like, you have to eat fresh and seasonal. And she doesn't depend on fridges. So everything is like, she cooks fresh every day. And yes, she's just like her diet is what we call Mediterranean diet. That is very fashionable nowadays. So everything that my grandma from my dad's side is what people now try to follow and, you know, embrace and discover and explore. So it's this kind of perfect Mediterranean lifestyle where you have like fresh veggies, fruits. She doesn't eat meat a lot, only like once every 2 weeks, but mostly she eats also seafood. So her like skin was glowing and she had like the perfect skin, and her eyes was greenish, which is rare. So my late grandmother, she passed away now, I mean, 5 years ago. I used to feel like we didn't appreciate her lifestyle, and until I now kind of, you know, being pampered by these kind of trends.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we need to go to, I don't know, and we go to the farmer's market, quote unquote, in Egypt. So and we call the farmer's market in English, in Cairo. This kind of affluent society's trends is just like, for me, very ironic, because we had it all. And then now we are discovering, oh, we lost it. And now we are rediscovering it's the best lifestyle that we should follow. But I didn't answer your question. So Nefertiti and Cleopatra, they are very ancient. And we feel that it's there is this kind of paradox where Egyptians lost the wisdom of their ancestors, but it is always the source of fascination for outsiders, for people from all over the world. So Cleopatra and Nefertiti are very iconic, and we have Hatshepsut. So women in ancient Egypt were very powerful. They were so smart, and they were so very beautiful. And even the discoveries of their beauty routine are very just fascinating, like this kind of the milk bath of Cleopatra. And Nefertiti happened to be looted outside of Egypt, and now it's in Germany. In one of the museums. And there is a huge campaign now to return Nefertiti head. Nefertiti for us is an ultimate expression of Egyptian femininity that was also embedded in her sense of being very powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's femininity and power.
I think she was the one of few pharaohs who were king or queen of both sides, because when I went there, I saw that two crowns she was able to hold, like, because she was queen of the whole area, not only just one side of Egypt and the other side of Egypt. So, yeah, definitely. I think Nefertiti should return to her homeland. When you were talking about your grandma and you talked about, moving to the Kohol and, all the eyeliners and all that, and then having some Khaliji influence, some Kuwaiti influence, and on the other side, on dad's side, it's all Egyptian and very rooted into homeland. So when you were little, did you see any beauty routine or rituals which your family was practicing, like a religion, like your mom or your grandma or anybody, like one particular thing which everybody was using?
I think henna for the hair.
Yeah. It is really good one, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It's back home in Pakistan, women use henna in their hair a lot, head hair. And they say it is helpful to keep the heat away. So, that it has that soothing, cooling impact on your skull, that it keeps the heat away from you. I think maybe that's the thing behind, because Cairo can be quite hot, isn't it? Did you follow same thing for yourself, or did you adapt them? Like, have you ever put henna in your hair or not at all?
I think I did it once.
Yeah.
When I was like around age of 11 or 12. But I feel like my beauty routine, as you said, like there is this kind of rediscovering of Kirubhadra and Nefertiti. Mm-hmm. And there is now a lot of cosmetic businesses, like local businesses in Egypt, where they try to sell and have this kind of beauty recipes ready for customers. So we have a brand that is called Nefertiti, and they have very nice essential oils. So I also sometimes read online, and one of my beauty recipes that I like is by Indians, mostly. So how we use like the almond oil on the face at night as like a facial mask before we sleep, and then we wash it in the morning. It worked for me.
Yeah.
The coconut oil scrub with like coffee grounds for body. So I think, yeah, I'm mostly into these kind of, I feel like I'm grabbing so many traditions. And thank you. Thanks for the globalization and the internet.
Is there any beauty tip or natural remedy passed down in your family? Like, because as you said that Egypt is quite rich with the natural remedies. So, yes, when I was there, I saw, people selling those things. And I think one was papyrus, which you could see, people try to sell it that, okay, this is the papyrus. But I actually got the honor to visit the actual papyrus factory over there and see how they make it. And then that was another thing, the essential oils and attar and all that. And they say, oh, this is something they just discovered, that that's how 5,000 years ago they used to do it. But I also know, because I have quite a few Egyptian friends, and there are some remedies they do, like rose water, yogurt, honey.
Exactly.
Yeah. So do you have anything like that which passed down by your family to you and you still use it?
Yeah. So sometimes we have lemons. In Egypt, the lemons are so sour and nice. You can use lemon as a deodorant, and it will keep your body fresh. If you use it in the bath, so you need only half a lemon for that, and it keeps your body fresh like 24 hours. Or like if you have sunburn, you can use yogurt. Mm. Or if you want a cleanser for your mm-hmm. face, you can use a lemon with a drop of honey and you scrub it to your whole face for 5 minutes and then you wash it with a tap water and that's it. I'm a big fan of olive oil and mm-hmm. we have the best olive oil, especially in the Sinai region.
Yeah.
So it's just, what we call it, it's magic. Mm. It's magic. So if like my daughter has a skin rush, I can use olive oil and disappears next day. Mm. If like I have some pain in my shoulder, I warm some olive oil and I rub it over my shoulder and the pain fades. Mm. So olive oil for me, it's a must. And yeah, I think my family, especially my mom, used to, she was really keen to eat right. So she was not like a big fan of deli meat.
Mm.
She prevented us to bring endomy.
Mm.
So for her, as like you have to eat a wholesome food.
Mm-hmm.
She likes to sort some like country chicken. Mm. So they are not like the chicken that from factories full of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the, what we call it, the
organic.
Slim, organic, free-range chicken. So my mom was into this kind of concept of you have to eat seasonal and you have to eat wholesome and you have to eat right for you to have a good health and you have lower skin.
I can see that. I can see that her thing is working. It is so special how family routines become your own. And in Egypt case, some of these traditions go back to, you know, thousands of years and we can't compete with them, what we have now. So definitely they are well done and well experienced. So about Egyptian art and, you know, the incredible beauty rituals, for example, Kohol eyeliner was used not only for beauty, but also to protect eyes from sunlight and infections. Do you see that tradition still influencing Egyptian beauty today, the Kohol and all that?
Yeah. Like I remember from my childhood, so from my dad's side, my mom from a coastal city on the Mediterranean, it's called Tumiata. It's like very industrial, very urban, very commercial. Whereas my dad from the rural area in Delta Egypt. So, and my dad is a strong believer that our genealogy is not corrupt. Like we are 100% Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he believes. And I can't verify this, but I go with what he believes. And I used to see these kind of traditions of putting kohol to the newborn to protect their eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's just for me, like, and how sometimes even they draw the eyebrows.
Thicker eyebrows. Well, that's interesting because it's the same thing in Pakistan.
Really?
Yeah. So we call it surma.
Mm.
And it is like, it is kohol, it's surma, you know, that powder, the black powder we use.
Yes, the non-chemical one.
So that is used for children, for the newborn. So people would have in their eyes and on their eyebrows to make sure they get thick eyebrows. So that's so cool to know that.
And it also religious. So there is some Coptic sometimes means Christian, Egyptian, or Coptic means Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
So Coptic, and they have something called Sabtunur, which is like the Saturday of the light.
Yeah.
And yeah, and even like my dad's memory, like how my grandma, Allah irhamha, she used to wake up on that day and put kohol for everyone, so for males and females alike.
In Islam, Muslims, they believe that it is good for your eyes. And when you go to Medina or Mecca, you do see that people are selling that, you know, stone which you just grind it, make it very fine powder and use it in your eyes. Like it's on that your eyes don't even feel that you have something there. It's grinded like that. Definitely, I'm so surprised that it actually came from Egypt, that tradition, because nowadays I see in Pakistan also people are not doing to that newborn, but definitely I have my own photos of few months old having that big coal on my eyes and all that. So Cleopatra was said to bathe in milk, as you said, to soften her skin and use honey mask for glow. Have you ever tried any of those ancient recipes for you?
So yes, but I'm not sure like it was the traditional one. So as we said, like these kind of 5,000 years ago beauty remedies and recipes are now on discover. And when I got married, I went to the spa.
Yeah.
And they told me, yeah, we will do like for you a Moroccan bath. So Morocco is also a very fascinating country that has beauty recipes, and you know, they are so much into this bath thing, and they do it in like religiously on a weekly basis. They have to go to the bath and scrub their bodies. And in Egypt, we don't have this kind of routine like on a weekly basis or anything. It's just like when you feel like it. And I started this when I got married, and when I was 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And they told me, oh, okay, we have a Cleopatra bath, and then we have something like they put my hands and my legs in wax and just softened my skin. Like it was like a baby skin. It was so soft.
Purifying wax, I think they called it, to just put it, it's like on your skin and then just remove it. It's not actually the hair removal for the dead skin removal, I think it is. Yeah,
yeah, it's another, another one. And this Cleopatra one was amazing, and it, you're like, you feel so fresh and you feel lighter. I don't know why. So it's like, I think milk, something in the
of course,
the materials that scrub the bodies.
Yeah, and milk is full of, you know.
But actually what I've heard, it is not a cow milk. It used to be donkey milk.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So donkey milk is high in protein.
Okay.
That's why Cleopatra used to use it.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. I always wondered, you know, because when you imagine them, you see in your brain, in your head, that they have the red lips and the, you know, red cheeks, and then their skin is glowing. It's the hair is healthy. Oh, I actually saw the wigs also.
Wigs and cosmetics and eyeliner were invented by Egyptians.
Yeah.
And Cleopatra was not Egyptian. She's like descending from a Hellenistic family.
Yes.
Which is modern day Macedonia.
Okay.
But they came and settled in Egypt for ages, for generations. And she was like the first generation of her family descent to speak Egyptian.
Oh, okay.
And she's the one that was really close to Egyptians. So she even dressed up like Egyptians and like the, you said, like the hair, the cosmetics. And also Egyptians, I don't know why we are not like the Greeks or the Roman, like this kind of loose garments. We used to, you know, have the body fit clothes. So it accentuates the body and the curves. Mm. So even like the Romans after the like colonized us back then, or ruled us back then, the Romans themselves started to be affected by Egyptian style of everything, even in how they bury the bodies. So I think this is one fact about Egypt, that Egypt has this capacity to contain and, you know, to mold any foreigner into its culture. And I think this is beautiful about Egypt in general.
So, are there any natural oils still part of your personal routine? Do you use any? You did say olive oil, but other than that?
So, olive oil, almond oil, and castor oil.
Yeah, castor oil is good for your lashes, isn't it?
For the lashes, for the hair, for the body.
Okay.
So, yeah, castor oil, it's thick, a bit thick, but you can like blend it with the almond oil and then use it.
Oh, awesome. A really good tip. I might need to try that one. I love that. It's proof that the real beauty secrets never expire, like, you know, what they were using many, many years ago, many centuries ago.
Yeah.
We still, you know, can benefit out of it.
Sometimes I use argan oil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is really good one. Yeah,
definitely. Argan is really good.
Yeah. So you are using all the goodies. So now coming to a bit of your today's thing. So you are juggling PhD, family life, personal care. So how do you make time for beauty rituals in such busy schedule?
Yeah, I don't stress myself.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So what I can do, I do. The one thing that is different when I moved here is that the sun is too strong.
Mm.
So I have to use wear sunscreen. Mm. And this thing I'm not like good at. Sometimes I really forget and then I get skin burns and then I say, oh. So, yeah, this is the one challenge for me.
Yeah. Definitely. When I moved here from Saudi Arabia, of course, we go up to 50 degrees over there. And it is very harsh sun. But over here, we are on 28, 30 degrees and sun is harsher. I don't know what's going on, but do you feel that the rays are penetrating into your skin and you get the sunburn very easily over here. So, we have to be good on wearing sunscreen and all that. So your research is in social anthropology. Do you see beauty as part of cultural identity? Or do you think that beauty is just a global thing?
Definitely, beauty is affected by so many things, so many factors. So the time we live in, economically, socially, culturally, and we always do modification to ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So from the way you wash your hair, you wash your face, you style your hair, clip your nails. So, I mean, beauty is not just there.
Yeah.
It's something that we have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And even people who, like, are minimalist in their beauty routines, I mean, it's a statement in itself.
Mm.
And now with, like, the social media being a part of our world and identities, it also kind of shifted how people perceive beauty and how they take on this kind of beauty norms of our times. And there's also the class factor. It's very tangible. So who gets to, you know, the opportunity to take care of their beauty and image and being presentable, and who can't afford this? So, you know, so many things that, I think, it's culturally definitely affected.
That is so true. I think makeup and the skincare and all that can be globally, but the wearing style, the clothes, they usually are affected by culture and they usually are shaped by the culture, that what is allowed in your culture and what is not allowed in your culture. So definitely the culture is there whenever we talk about beauty and all that. But I was just thinking, when you worked in human rights and advocacy, do you think access to self-care and beauty is part of overall well-being and equality in different countries? Because you have worked in three countries?
Yeah.
So is it something, you know, you see that it's part of, you know, self-care is part of general well-being and equality, or is it just for only female, they look after themselves? Or
self-care now is very encompassing, like, term or concept. So people who work, like, in humanitarian situations, they have to take care because they I like facing more traumatizing stories. So self-care is also not only psychologically, but how to be able to take care of how much sleep you get, how to, you know, make sure that you have the same level of energy, so you exercise well, eat well. Yeah, it's a challenge of nowadays to make sure that you are well on so many different levels, and you are also socially surrounded by people who makes you feel, you know, happy and content. So even like self-care itself, I think it became something that we strive to maintain in nowadays world. Yeah, and you are not sure, like, are you doing the good thing or not? Are you following the tips you are seeing online or... Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah. It is like so much available. And to find out which suits you
exactly
best is a challenge.
Yeah.
I really admire how you blend intellect with self-care, Nooran. Beauty can be both at personal, joy and social conversation. So I really admire that. Now, if you could bring one Egyptian beauty routine to New Zealand and make it popular here, what that would be?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. One Egyptian routine. I don't know. Yeah, because I feel like also we are, in Egypt, we are blessed to have nicest beaches, especially on the Red Sea. So you just, if you dip yourself in the Red Sea and you come out, you are just beautiful. The water is very crystal clear, and there's some minerals I know in the water and the sand in the atmosphere that makes you beautiful. So yeah, just try to visit Egypt. Especially in the time of like October, November.
Those are the best seasons. And I think February, March would be another. Of course, Dunedin is colder than Egypt. It's upside down kind of story. Has the climate of Dunedin changed something which you were doing on daily routine, or you were doing quite often, a beauty routine you were doing back home when you were in Egypt or you were in Beirut? You were doing that, but it has changed here. Is there something?
I was eating lots of fruits.
Oh, yes. The variety of fruit you get over there.
And the fishies. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was like just eating, you know, like... snacking on two cucumbers.
Yeah.
And now here the cucumber is, I don't know, for how much.
$5 for
so
one.
So you feel guilty when you crunch your cucumbers.
Yeah. Definitely, we are missing lots of veggies and lots of fruit. We have very limited choice over here when it comes to veggies.
Yeah, and now is the season of mangoes.
Oh, yes.
I know, also in Pakistan.
Yeah. The best mangoes ever, but yeah. Oh, well. You have to lose something to find something better. So what's one thing you do that instantly makes you feel radiant no matter how busy the day is? Is there something which is like, okay, like for me, lipstick. I would wear lipstick other than anything and I would feel, okay, I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm presentable.
Yeah, this is also for my mom, because my mom has like a very perfect shaped lips, but my lips are like not really thick. So I like lip balms.
Lip balms. So that is like, okay, I'm done. Good. So Nooran, one thing which I like to ask people, that if you were given a superpower, what would that be and how would you use it?
Superpower?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need a lot of money.
That was very honest.
Yeah, I just need a lot of money. I want to... It is not a charity or anything. It's just I want to have a place like, you know, soup kitchens in Western world. Just I want to have something in Egypt like this. I know that culturally is different, but I don't know how to do it. It's just like to provide hot meals during dinner time for people who just want it. It is not like for homeless or poor, for everybody.
Okay, awesome. So, Niran, I know that you have worked in three different countries and you have worked on human rights. Do you want to tell us something about your career and how that was your choice? Was it your first choice? And how is that shaping your daily routine?
Oh, yeah, so it's, yeah, it was kind of, I don't know, I feel like my whole life it's, you know, a series of lovely accidents. Yeah, so it was a coincidence. I majored in sociology from the gate. I know that I love societies, my mind is a bit abstract, and I love cultures. I want to know why people do the things that they do. And my both parents are Egyptians, yes, but they are from totally different cultural, economic context. My mom from the coastal city that I told you already about, and my dad is from a rural area, and I felt like the two contexts are so different, despite that they are like 1.5 hour away drive. That's why I was intrigued to study societies, cultures, and then I loved social anthropology because it was more of that doing this kind of study, but you hang out with people and you privilege their own perspective about their own life. So you don't impose your life and you say, oh, this is rural community, this must be so primitive, they need to modernize. No, in social anthropology we study what it is without any moral judgment. I worked in human rights in an organization that want to support the disabled people's organizations. So I saw and I dealt with especially the mothers of persons with disabilities. And I think these moms are like the best moms in the entire world. I just was so... like, I admired their strength, their grasp, and their love for their children. And I loved how they are, like, the best advocates I've ever seen. How they are so resourceful. And despite the lack of services, I'm not sure if it's the same in your country, but in Egypt, it's just like you feel that the government is absent, you know, or like the services are just not sufficient. So these moms, she just go like cross the extra miles for their kids. And I think this kind of gave me a lot of strength, not strength, sorry, inspiration. And every time I just remember them and yeah, my heart, you know, gets full of good things. And
So living in Lebanon and growing up in Egypt and now in New Zealand, do you see any similarities in beauty routines in women? Or do you think that due to different climates, they all are different? And which one you find the best one? Like these women, they actually are good at self-care and they actually do something every day to make themselves feel better, look better.
For sure, Lebanon.
Lebanon.
So Lebanese women are known and they have this fame to be the most beautiful women of the Arab world. And I can't argue. They are. And when I went to Lebanon, it is not about beauty or like... it's about their personality. So they are so smart and they know how. And for them, like, to take care of yourself is part of self-assertion. You assert and you affirm your identity. So for them, beauty is something very primary, whereas in Egypt, it might be secondary or thirdly. So women in Egypt, they take care of their families. They, you know, they prioritize the family, the man, the home first, and then she comes maybe afterwards. Whereas in Lebanon, it's, I don't know, it's culturally infused with beauty. Like, women has to be very beautiful. And even if she is, like, burdened by, I don't know, household chores or family stuff. And for me, this was, like, very striking. And how much... Yes, they are sometimes they are obsessed, I think, with plastic surgery. But at the same time, I observed that each likes to have its own style. So the style is very personalized. It is not like they copy each other or like they look the same. I didn't feel that. What else? So I felt like no matter how busy women or how harsh the economy could be, they always look impeccable and flawless.
That's so cool. And what about Dunedin?
Dunedin is different. Dunedin is people, I think, more easygoing and, more minimal.
I think it's the weather also that doesn't let us do too much, you know, showing off, because we always have to cover in big rags, big jackets. It is amazing, Nooran. The first show I did with you, and this is the second one. Time flies with you. And it's almost close to the time. But before we wrap up, it's time for our Glow and Tell rapid fire round. I will ask quick questions. You answer with the first thing that comes to the mind. Ready?
Yes.
Tea with mint or Turkish coffee?
Tea with mint.
I knew that, because when you were talking about your grandma and you said, oh, she drinks coffee with...
tea with cardamom.
Yeah, cardamom, where you guys drink with mint. And I remember when I used to live in Saudi Arabia and I had quite a few Egyptian friends, having tea with mint and with cheese sandwich, that was the best thing to have in the morning, you know. That reminds me those days. I call them golden days. Morning skincare or night skincare?
Night skincare. When you have time.
Yeah. And that almond oil on your face and all that. Gold jewelry or silver?
Silver.
That's interesting, because usually Arab like gold jewelry. Like, you know, the gold shops in Middle East are so big that myself, I'm a big fan of gold jewelry. And whenever I went there, there were few things I didn't even know where you wear them, because those were so big, and the belts, so big at... But it's amazing. You like silver jewelry better. Lipstick or eyeliner?
Eyeliner.
Eyeliner, sand or snow?
Sand.
Favorite Egyptian dish?
Kushari.
Oh, I love kushari. I was talking to Ahud yesterday. She's Egyptian from Auckland. She came to our clinic yesterday to do cupping. And she was saying that people didn't know what kushri is until her mom started a little food stall in a market, night market. And now she's famous for her kushri. And I'm like, how can people not know about it? That is so
number
yummy.
One street food of Cairo.
I think the time I was there, I think it was one of my daily thing to go eat kushri. The fried onion.
And the sauces.
The garlic. And just the rice itself, you know. I used to try the rice first without any sauce on it. And then with the sauce. And then the fried onion. That makes my mouth water.
I have to invite you.
Oh, thank you. I'll be there. Face mask or hair mask?
Hair mask.
Hair mask, yeah. Oud, floral or citrus perfume?
Citrus.
Citrus, yeah. One beauty item you always have in your handbag?
Hand cream.
Yeah. Good one. Cairo in one word?
City like no other?
Yes.
But it's all messiness.
Yes, city that doesn't sleep. Love it, love it. Niran, it's been such a joy hearing your beautiful journey from the ancient rituals of your heritage to modern routines. You carry with you even today. Thank you for letting us into your story. Is there something before we close, one piece of beauty advice from your culture, your travels, or your own experience that you would like every listener to take away from today's show?
Having olive oil in your pantry would always save you.
whether you cook, whether you massage, whether you use
it. But a good one.
And olive oil definitely has lots of healing things in it. So to all our listeners, this was Noran, and Noran shared with us her beauty, her journey, her travel things and all that. Remember, beauty is both the story you tell and the care you give yourself. Until next time, keep glowing and keep telling your story. We will be with you next time. Thank you.
Thanks for glowing with us on this episode of Glow and Tell on OARFM, where every story radiates with culture, confidence and care.
Catch more powerful conversations on oar.org.nz, Spotify, Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your glow.
From all of us, Humaira, Haneen and Marwa, stay bold, stay brilliant and we will see you next time.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.